Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane podcast Patreon channel. We are going to be releasing this in mid-January. We're recording it on December 30th. This is my last recording of 2024. What a great fucking year it's been on this show. I'm so excited about everything coming out in 2025 on the show. And in January, we're going to be devoting a lot of the main show's space to Krakoa. So it made sense to make room for some weird little plant people over on the Patreon. And we get to talk about one of my all-time favorite camp Marvel villains. He's truly terrible, just the worst, the worst. Samuel Smithers or Plant Man. I'm very excited to be welcoming my friends Philip and Marcus on back with me. Let me have you both introduce yourselves with your name and pronouns. Tell everybody a little about yourself, and I would love to hear your preliminary thoughts on Plant Man. Or I don't know, did you even know this guy before I suggested this character to you both? Let's begin with Marcus on Nasso. Marcus on, welcome back to Grey Malkin Lane.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I'm really happy that we get to close out the year, close out the party of 2024 for you.
It's been a journey, my friend.
That's great. Yeah. So I'm Marcus on Nasso. My pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer of the Ringo nominated series By the Horns. I also wrote a Voracious plus a bunch of other stories and comic book anthologies like Cthulhu Invades Neverland and Don't Push the Red Button. And I'm also a host on two podcasts now, the Metalheads podcast and the Endless Metal podcast. And tonight, in honor of Plant Man, I'm drinking a beer called Singing to Plants by
Aha.
Mars Brewing, and check it out.
I'm gonna guarantee no one has ever used the phrase in honor of Plant Man before. This was the first in the universe.
Yeah, he sucks. He's terrible. I kind of like his suit in the beginning. But yeah, it's funny because we've done this before, Chad, and this villain is a lot like other villains.
Marcus and I have done Obnoxio the Clown together, and this guy is somehow worse than both. No, he's not. Obnoxio is the worst. Never mind.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. And the ice cream man guy, whatever his name was, ice
Ice
cream.
cream, yeah. Who has since made an appearance on Krakoa in the Marvel canon. He's
Yeah.
part of the lexicon. Let me also welcome Philip Lundquist back to the show. Philip, I constantly want to say your name Lindquist. It's been said that way on my show before. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's a you, very, very Swedish. My pronouns are he, him. I am a crazy rabbit dad, and I do love plants, so a lot of Plant Man resonates. So from when this comes out, like a month after it, is when I'll even be starting some of my earliest plants. So the lavender, the celery, the rosemary. Do they turn out? No. But do I still hope that they will? Yes.
And are you a fan of Mr. Sam Smithers?
I am also a pro wrestling fan, so the costume for the issues that I covered like lends itself very well. Like you could totally make that your gear to come out and do Plant Man as a wrestling
That
gimmick.
would be so good. Are you WWE, AEW, both, or
Both.
more?
We have a
Nice.
really great local indie promotion in the Twin Cities called First. So they've been like really great allies. Like the pride flag has been part of their logo, and they refuse to make it not part of their logo. So there was someone, or there's a group that was heckling a drag king that was performing. So WrestlePalooza, 2-day event, they do bands, they do burlesque, and then they had drag also. And so people were heckling, and it was reported, and the people were like, if that ever happens again, let us know, and we will bench them out of like First Avenue. Like it's a big, the famous club in Minneapolis. And yeah, they're great.
Wow. Yeah, I'm a big wrestling fan, so
After
you
your
know.
D-Man episode, I'm like, he's gay, he's a pro wrestler, like checks all the boxes for me, like
D-Man,
overeater.
we converted
Yes.
you specifically to be a D-Man fan from that episode, which I'm thrilled about. He's delightful.
Yes, and now I have like a whole short box of just his appearances. So
He's great. Okay, so early Marvel Villain of the Month Club, they're introducing camp villain after camp villain. They're all in the lexicon. Some of the weirdest and most camp villains show up in the old Ant-Man comic, in the old Human Torch comic, and some of the others. There's some really bizarre villains of the month that show up. See some of my episodes on like the unicorn and the porcupine and the eel. These are very like 60s Batman coded, just bizarre fashion. Bizarre people. This villain's real name is Samuel Smithers, and he's very giving that energy in all of his appearances. This is Plant-Man as played by Paul Lynde. I've also cast the Dazzler, like Angel's evil uncle Dazzler, as Paul Lynde, but this guy's giving even more Paul Lynde energy than the Burt Worthington the Dazzler does. We're not going to cover every one of this guy's appearances comprehensively, but this villain is delightful. He's the very definition of camp. He is Plant and Man. This is when, you know, you go over to Batman and you get characters like Poison Ivy, who are really fun because they're plant themed and they're like anti-billionaire. There's a large number of plant controlling supervillains and superheroes in the world out there. We talked about some of them in various episodes related to Krakoa. Do you guys have any favorite plant villains or plant heroes besides Poison Ivy that come to mind?
I'm a Black Tom fan. I thought he was great in the Krakoan era, and like he had a job, he did it well for the most part. Like I thought he was great, and the codedness of him and Juggernaut is just fun.
Yeah, I mean, plant heroes like Man Thing and Swamp Thing.
There's a large list, more than you think, but we're going to focus on Plant Man specifically today. I'll introduce this guy initially. He first shows up in Strange Tales number 113 in October 1963. So this is way back, created by Stan Lee and Joe Cates. On the cover, there's a man in black with a hat and a mask and a coat, and he's firing a gun at some bushes and trees, which are then spraying dew all over the human torch. So this guy's spraying a gun at some plants who squirt the torch, and his fire goes out because of the wet dew. And this is the introduction to this villain. He can't escape from the wet dew. It's going to be all downhill from here if you don't love this guy already, just from that first cover. So Johnny Storm shows up for a date with his new girlfriend, Dory Evans, who I love. And she has a creepy... So Dory Evans is a 60s chick who, her thing with Johnny is always like, I like Johnny Storm, but I don't have any patience for the human torch. If you're going to flame on, mister, then our date is over. And Johnny is in love with her, which is exasperating for him because all the other girls love him because he's the human torch. So I think it's a really delightful character. She later gets like returned as like a mother of four in the 80s when like Johnny goes back to flirt with her and he's like, oh, you're old with children now. But she gets a bunch of playtime in the 60s. If you go to the Marvel appendix, I've written about both Plant Man and Dory Evans over there. I love them both very much, actually. So he's on a date with Dory Evans and she has a creepy gardener that works for her dad, and he's giving them the eye like, don't flame on around me, Johnny. And he's like, oh, there's no way to figure out a female, dames, they're all killjoys. It's very early 60s. Dory's dad is pissed off because the gardener has been using his time to work on his own inventions. My invention isn't crazy. I'm positive flowers have intelligence. I've spent years trying to increase their IQ, and I know I'm about to succeed. That's the voice I'm giving Sam Smithers the whole episode, everyone. I hope you're all right with that.
That's terrible, but perfect.
Yeah, I love it. Really, it just works. He gets fired, and that night, a random bolt of lightning, remember this for later, strikes the gun that he has created, and it makes him capable of communicating with plants. And when he says the phrase, fan my hide, a plant starts growing around him, and it begins fanning him. And then he immediately orders two trees to fight for fun. I've become the master of all plant life. I hereby dub myself Plant-Man. He then commits a series of robberies. He frames Dory Evans' dad for like revenge for firing him. Plant-Man then fights the human torch. He orders the bushes to spray some dew. He orders some like roots to grow and ensnare Johnny. And then like some weeds to tie him up. And then he just leaves him there. He just walks away and leaves this teenage boy there. So next day, he's designed a terrible new green costume for himself. It's only fitting that the Plant Man, mighty ruler of the vegetable world, should wear a green costume. And he decides that Central Park is going to be his new base. He goes insane very quickly. First, I'll conquer New York, and then city after city, and finally the world. Puny humans won't have a chance against Plant Man. Plants outnumber people by the billions, and I rule the plants. Today, Earth, and tomorrow, the stars! God, this guy is crazy right away. The human torch attacks. Plant Man tries leaf storms, toppling trees, wet seaweed, and raining acorns and fruits from treetops. But Johnny is able to finally get rid of him with a big old fireball, and Plant Man hides inside a tree. The end. This guy's fucking great. What are your thoughts on the initial appearance of the plant man? Because it's everything.
Wow.
I love the imagery because, like, wet seaweed against the Human Torch, of course, like, that would be wonderfully
The
effective.
asbestos man was busy. He should
And
be the official sponsor for Mountain Dew because he just does the dew all the time.
like the throwing acorns thing, like there's a lot of oak trees up at Daryl's place, and sometimes they just fall. Like, especially if it's a masting year and the tree decides to like pump out way more acorns than normal and they just fall from on high. Like, it hurts from experience.
Yeah, they're pretty hard, actually. He likes using the same things over and over, I know, especially in the beginning. I love the outfit, how it kind of looks like the shadow, where he's just got that mask
Sure.
over and then the hat. Oh, it's really bad.
His entire costume gallery, and there's a shocking number of looks, are really bizarre. They're all bad and bizarre. So his basic origin, if I'm oversimplifying, disgruntled gardener, gun gets struck by lightning, and then when he says the phrase "fan my hide," he discovers he can control plants and suddenly has universal conquering aspirations. This man is everything.
0 to 60.
0 to 10,000. Like, he's so much.
Like his next outfit is tied for first, along with the typical one with a gigantic dumb
The
headpiece.
plumed headpiece. The Strange Tales 121 is when he comes back.
Strange Tales 121, right? Yeah. So first off, the cover is pretty fantastic. Plant Man is in his new leafy green costume, using his plant powers to fire acorns at the Human Torch, who is seemingly overwhelmed by them. And when I saw this, I couldn't understand why he just didn't make a fire shield and burn them. But in just a few pages, it all makes perfect sense because the idiocy of the Human Torch is revealed. Also, the tree and Plant Man on the cover look about the same size in this image. I don't know if there's an acorn producing shrubbery out there, or if Plant Man now has size manipulation powers, or if the art is just bad, but somehow he is tree-sized. So inside the issue, we start with a full page image of Plant Man already engaged in battle with the Human Torch. We get to see his dramatic new costume in all its sustainable glory. It's all green, flowing leaves with a full mask and his gigantic leaf collar, like you guys were mentioning. So basically, if you're listening to this, imagine a philodendron come to life, and that is exactly what Plant Man is.
It is leaf couture.
Or
I was
that.
gonna say it's like a peony blossom bud. Like, it's got the very round covered in stuff and then the leaves coming off the side. And when he runs, the fact that two big petals next to his head flow back like a little cape or capelet, love it.
So on this splash page, Johnny's being pelted by water from a red hose because Plant Man has his purple plant ray gun and he's zapping a ground faucet handle that's an inch away from his hand instead of just turning it on. And Johnny is also being attacked by plants which are binding his ankles and lifting him off the ground. And the caption reads, which is great, "One of the most fearsome foes the Torch has ever faced," which instantly made me want to see a list of all the D-listers that Johnny has battled before that.
They're bad.
So we go into a flashback on the next page and get a recap of Plant Man's origin that basically tells you what you didn't need to read in the first issue. And Plant Man has escaped jail and made his plant ray even stronger. And now he can make plants grow bigger and walk around on branch feet, which is interesting. So now that he's upgraded his style and weaponry, Plant Man decides he needs to go another round with Johnny. So he makes basically a mini Ent straight from Lord of the Rings and has this thing sneak inside Johnny's room while he's sleeping, just so it can toss a bucket of water on him. Johnny snaps awake, freaked the fuck out, and in swoops Plant Man, who says, "Forgive my silent pets for waking you, Torch. They were merely following my commands." And Johnny goes, "Plant Man, I should have guessed." And then the best part comes. Apparently, Plant Man had his little Ent toss water on Johnny to prevent him from flaming on, which is completely insane. Then he makes Johnny go into a closet, which Johnny seems completely fine with. He never tries fighting, never even attempts to flame on. He just goes in to dry off. So now that Johnny is locked away, Plant Man has the upper hand. Time to go out and do some crime.
I took the precaution of having my plant wet you so that you cannot flame on just yet, which is ridiculous.
It's just fun. Johnny, just punch him. Like, what are you doing? You can't use your powers. I'll just go in this closet and wait.
Johnny likes the closet.
So Plant Man goes to a hotel where he has a plant restrain the hotel detective, and then a
As one does.
tree a tree, rips open a safe so that he can have his green slaves rob it. Farewell, he says. My victory is doubly sweet because the Human Torch lives nearby and couldn't help you all. We cut to Human Torch, who has finally escaped the dreaded closet and is looking for Plant Man. He finds Doris at the hotel, who begs him to catch Plant Man because her father had fired him. And Johnny promises that he will, and he flies off. And he goes to see the Fantastic Four for encouragement and help. And the thing is, they're crushing weights, and he puts them down and assures Johnny he'll do whatever he can to help him. So then Johnny just basically hangs out and waits for Plant Man to make the first move. And it doesn't take long because he receives a handwritten note inviting Johnny on a date in the park. Plant Man drives his convertible there, which is disappointingly non-plant themed.
Right.
And then they just fucking fight.
Missed opportunity.
Really, right? They spent all this time on the costume. It's flowing, it's leaf-like, and his car is just...
Like, in the car, he's got, like, this good close-up of his mask, and it's... You don't need a mask. You're already covered in green, but he still has it, and it's the mask equivalent of those, like, horn-rimmed glasses that were so popular in the 60s.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's got those angles to it, and, like, the flare on the sides. Like, it's so much more than it needs to be, but also...
It's his best costume, I think. So they're fighting, and a weakened Johnny gets blasted by the hose like on page one. So we're back to that opening scene. And Plant Man has this fucking fuckwit Johnny dead to rights, but then suddenly decides to make the plants all bow before him just for fun. And Johnny takes the opportunity to grab some weed killer that just happens to be lying around in the park, exclaiming, "My body dried faster than you think." And Johnny kills the minion plants with weed killer, and Plant Man runs inside a greenhouse where he has cacti shoot quills at Torch, and Torch melts them, which that's actually pretty smart, pretends to give up, then shoots these heat signals into the air that somehow go through the ceiling of the building, and then the police see them. Meanwhile, Torch and Plant Man stop fighting and have a chat about the police and Doris. Plant Man threatens her life, but Johnny reveals that the thing is protecting her, and we see Ben Grimm clobbering vines. Plant Man gets arrested and vows we haven't heard the last of him, which is unfortunately true. And at the end,
true, you mean?
And at the end, Johnny brings Doris some candy in a package, and she's worried it might be a plant, which I thought was actually a pretty fun little ending.
Okay, the fact that Johnny is a teenager is not okay when I put it in this context, but we have this queer-coded man sneaking into a teenager's room, making him all wet, shoving him in a closet, and then inviting him on a date in the park later, where his little plant subjects can bow before him. This is very like Kill the Wabbit. Like, there's like classic like Looney Tunes music playing in the background, and there's like hijinks and laugh tracks and like zoinks, like energy, right? This is very like Scooby-Doo. The whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's bad, but I mean, this is how a lot of these old comics went, especially for these villains. I think they just kind of threw them in there, see what happens, and if they like writing them or there's like a response to them, they bring them back and see what else they can do with them. Seems to
this
be a
is
trend.
One of those issues where guests on my early show would be like, Chad, what are you making me read? Because it was just this camp 60s stuff, and I love it. So he's next in Fantastic Four Annual 3, where all the, you know, villains are attacking the wedding of Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Girl. Then Plant Man gets recruited by Count Nefaria for the X-Men story, where they take Washington, D.C. hostage, and the original X-Men have to go fight him alongside, like, Eel and Porcupine and Scarecrow and Unicorn. I think Plant Man's most recent appearance actually was in the original X-Men one-shot, which is a flashback to this time where the old X-Men are fighting Plant Man, and then they get sucked into that time adventure. We covered that on my show last November. Go give it a listen. It's a good time. Then I think the only really fun moment is in that X-Men battle is when Plant Man is fighting Jean Grey in like a lazier version of his plant costume, and he fires a gas gun and he goes, "You do not know me, Marvel Girl, but soon the world will remember the name Plant Man and cringe at its merest mention." You got your wish, man. We've been cringing the whole time.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. And also, in these issues, his costume has some yellow flourishes to it, which is kind of nuts. Like, on the cover, it's all green, but inside, there's, like, yellow parts to it. It's the first time I see that.
Was it fun for you to revisit those old X-Men comics?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, I would say, because I was a huge fan of the X-Men growing up, but, you know, I didn't read the early stuff until much later. I got into the Chris Claremont stuff first, so it is kind of fun to go back and kind of see the roots. And one of the things I love about the podcast is that you do these villains who you don't hear about that much, and you can go back and see where they came from. And now they're even popping up. Like you just mentioned, Ice Cream has popped up in a current comic. Like, whoever thought that would happen? So it's neat to go back and see the roots of just the imagination that kind of flourished back in the day.
Sometimes I get conned into doing Patreon episodes on characters I hate. I fucking love Plant Man. I think he's amazing.
I do like that little cadre of villains together, of like Eel and Unicorn, and like they're all sort of vying for who's more important. And
Eel and Unicorn, the fact that it takes fine, but Plant Man and Porcupine can do no wrong.
And what a good foil for Beast is Porcupine, because he just turns his quills outward and he gets Hank in the feet. It's, where it hurts the most.
It's fantastic. Plant Man gets a pretty big glow up in Submariner 2 and 3. Philip, do you want to tell us about that one?
It's great. This is his gigantic, ridiculous headpiece that sort of defies description. It's very two-dimensional. Like, so it's in line with his face, and it's just so big. Sort of fig leaf-like. Like, there's a lot of ribbing to it. But he's got the same sort of monochrome green leafy gloves, leafy underwears, leafy boots. Mm-hmm. So, like, take away the bodysuit and leave just those parts, pro wrestling costume. It's perfect. But we get Namor starting out looking very hunky, smashing some other equipment. He has his own deal with Destiny, not the Destiny Irene that we know from X-Men, but another Destiny. And he goes swimming off.
This is a man named Paul Destin who like wears a pink onesie and a little hat and like makes Namor think he's homeless for like 20 years. It's fine.
Because of course he's wearing that, because why not? So Namor goes swimming off to find Reed Richards, and we get Plant Man monologuing to himself, which he does a lot. Like, I don't know where the rankings are for monologuing villains, but I feel like Plant Man has to be in the top five or so.
Oh, he's just, no, I don't think he is.
You'd be surprised how many of these villains do this.
He's just laying it all out. So he put a lot of effort into finding a quiet and secluded space to work on some plants, as you do when you're Plant Man. And he's just so offended that there's someone approaching. And so we're made to think that it's Namor. But really, when it's revealed to be Black Bolt, it's sort of a nice swerve. So the Inhumans are there for reasons that were not quite clear to me. But it's a nice cameo. And we get Triton off to investigate what the submarine is. Why is it here? So far from shipping lanes and all that. So Plant Man goes off and monologues a bit more of like, oh, there's someone coming, there's someone new, and like, oh, but I recognize this one as Namor. So when you stop, he's got the two people approaching from different sides. He panics until he realizes he can make a plan out of this. So he announces to Namor, be my bidding, someone is coming, fight them. And it works. Like, his plan works surprisingly well. He gets Namor and
what? Namor didn't stop to think about what he was doing? That's so odd for that character.
Absolutely not. The theme in these issues. So, and like the sub is kind of cool. He's got like a scrying pool that he's bending over and looking at stuff as he's hatching this plan. Also on the way to hatching this plan, he gets attacked by one of his own octopods. Like, he wanders too close to one of his plant experiments and it grabs him. Exposition moment, he has a veggie gun that he can use to both create and destroy his own creations. Which, this plant did nothing wrong. It's just living its best life, looking for something to hold on to. It just held on to the wrong person. So off he goes, inspires this fight. So much dialogue in a fight, like surprising amount. And amongst the monologuing, he's like, oh no, I need to submerge. I can't be here for this fight. Girl, you should have thought of that sooner. Because apparently the sub takes a while to go under. In the melee, Namor knocks Triton in through the plastic dome. Like, how nefarious sub that Plant Man stole was not terribly sturdy. So in they go, they battle some more. Namor rips off Triton's saline apparatus, draining him of his strength. He's about to die. And Namor's like, oh, I'm not a murderer. So he throws Triton back into the sea so that they can continue to fight in apparently a more honorable way. Also, it's unclear what Namor's goal like is for this fight. Does he just intend to knock Triton unconscious? We get some of that fight. We get a Lady Dorma interlude for reasons. She's very heartbroken over Namor not being around.
The most forgotten of the 60s love interests, Lady Dorma. Rest in peace, Lady Dorma. We love you.
I mean, she has some great looks, like some classic 60s poses as she's thinking about her man and how she can barely function without him because 60s. Fight continues. Plant Man finally has had enough and he fires his veggie ray at some kelp with that entangle and trap Triton and Namor and bring them on board.
The veggie ray.
The veggie ray.
Is it the veggie ray or something? It's like, it looks like Vega. Oh.
Yeah, Vigo Ray.
Could be Vega. That sounds cooler.
His badgie Ray.
So he's got some fun quotes. Go and destroy. Then to your grave, smiling fool. You'll be no less dead. That one might be my favorite. The Inhumans try to pursue the sub, but the sub, despite being fragile, is very fast, and the sub evades the charging Inhumans. And we get a nice preview for Kelp attacking London. Issue 3 opens up. Namor and Triton are trapped in these weird little metal tubes with little clear tops and a little antenna on top, that little clear top. And Plant Man tries to command Namor for the second time to go forth and be his herald and announce the doom to London. And Namor says no. At least Namor is very consistent. Like, he does not like anyone telling him what to do, let alone this weird guy in a very large headpiece. So Namor declines, Triton declines. And so Plant Man spins them around and teleports them into a room with anti-plants. It's what I'm calling them, because somehow they are not producing oxygen. They are drawing the oxygen from their lungs. The seventh grade plant lesson: plants generate oxygen, but they also consume it because they both photosynthesize and then they can the sugars and then they consume the sugars like we do. So creating carbon dioxide. So I have to justify this in my head that the plants are creating more carbon dioxide than they can use. And that's how this is working, because the idea that plants are taking out oxygen from the air just doesn't jive otherwise with me. So,
but the rest of it does.
I can get on board with it. Like some strangely sticky seaweed being created from this ray, I can get on board with. Also in this room, like, there's the weird tendrils. Like, sure. Like, there are some weird things that happen.
I mean, let's just start from the beginning. Plant Man borrows a submarine. Like, just that.
Borrows, in air quotes. Like, you know he took that and hoped that no one would notice.
He like, broke up with Count Nefaria and he took it as a consolation prize. It's fine.
I mean, fair.
Chad, that's the exact same move that Captain Barracuda made.
Uh-huh.
They just recycled it. Well, actually, I don't even know which one came first.
So with Triton and Namor dispatched into this room where the plants are going to kill them, he decides he doesn't need a muscle-bound vassal. And he just creates Leviathan by shooting his veggie ray at some coral. The coral Leviathan is superior to his big kelp monster. Like, it can walk on land. It is super indestructible, as we see. Plant Man is like, I'm succeeding. I'm getting my revenge on London for the slums where I grew up. I'm getting revenge.
So we learn he grew up in London here, but I'm not going to do a British accent for this man at all. He just gets the gay voice the whole time, guys.
Fair. Yeah, it's great. There's a cactus that shoots its spines. So if anyone's seen Digimon, there's a plant version of a Digimon named Palmon, and she digivolves into a big cactus with boxing gloves, and her attack is needle spray. And that's exactly what's happening here. But Namor doesn't care. Those needles cannot pierce his flesh. By knocking out this cactus, he and Triton gather strength in the water that the cactus is storing from inside, and that's how they're able to escape Plant Man. So he was doing so well up until this point, until he put a plant that stores water in a room with people who need water for their strength. So off they go. They escape. Namor knocks out Plant Man with a single punch, which, fair, Namor is very strong. But the Plant Man, like, in some issues, like, he looks surprisingly built in his suit. Like, that suit is adding pounds of muscle to him.
It's like plant fibers. He just, like, boosted himself up.
So they go out. They knock out Plant Man. Namor wants to destroy the Vega Ray, but Triton's like, oh no, we can't. Don't let yourself be distracted. We have to deal with Leviathan first. Does this count as like a buddy romp where, since they're bound by like a shackle of energy, the two of them, they have to travel everywhere together?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Off they go.
Namor and Triton's gay adventure in the sea. It's great.
Yes. I mean, good for both of them. They are both looking very well put together. there.
They've earned it.
Yes. So off they go. There's some scenes where Leviathan is shot with some missiles from a helicopter, and like a rubber band, he's bouncing back. The missiles had no effect.
It's very Krakoa, the island that walks like a man. Yeah.
It really is. He smashes a tank, Leviathan does, those poor souls inside, womp womp. And the Leviathan starts to make a move for the palace because it can't be a London adventure without the Queen being threatened. So off it goes. We get another Dorma interlude. I don't know what other way to frame it outside of an interlude away from the action for the drama and her need to have that aristocratic stiff upper lip for her people. But also, as soon as she's inside, the woman emerges and she weeps for Namor,
Who's off on his gay adventures? Yep.
who is off with a very hunky Triton. So off they go. Triton and Namor discover that Leviathan is afraid of fire, which you'd think Leviathan wouldn't have experienced fire being a coral and living underwater. But there you go. They grab a tinder. By tinder, I mean flaming beam. Fly around Leviathan. They also drop an anchor on him, but that just serves to divide Leviathan into two parts. So really, they're just doing cuttings of this super plant. Those very successful cuttings that I cannot do with my own mock orange. But off with they go. There's two of them. They encircle Leviathan in flame to the point where Leviathan starts fighting his other half until finally Namor and Triton drop a giant vat of explosives on poor Leviathan. And that is the end of that. We find out that Plant Man's energy shackle is tied to Leviathan. So as soon as Leviathan is destroyed, Triton and Namor are free from each other. Off they go. Plant Man is sort of devastated with the destruction of Leviathan. My words, now mere empty threats. I mean, he does also get some panels of like his arms raised in anguish as he's underlit from exploding sparks. So he has these very dramatic moments.
And he has this, like, it's a pretty big upgrade here. And when you start to read between the lines and see this guy as an actual threat, he's able to create plant life, right? We've seen that from the beginning, but in this case, he creates a giant monster that sustains life after Plant Man is defeated. So watch for some of those themes in a little while, because this guy has some pretty scary adventures along the way. And
Oh,
this
yeah.
is his
Well, he's
first kind of
super
big upgrade.
powerful.
Yeah.
Super
Yeah, this
powerful.
is
He just doesn't
when.
know how to use it.
This is when he's able to not only make plants ambulatory, but they also grow. So when first Leviathan is created, he's like half the size. And then with another shot from his Vega Ray, Leviathan grows even greater, which, given the state of our coral reefs, this might not be bad. Like, Plant Man in this world could really do a face turn and be a hero.
So he is next in Captain America 158, 159 under the leadership of the Viper, and he joins a team called the Crime Wave alongside Eel and Porcupine and Scarecrow again, and they rob a jewelry store, and he has a Vega Ray again, but Captain America defeats him. And then he's in Defenders 36, 37. The titles of these two issues are A Garden of Earthly Demise and An Evil in Bloom. And this is where Plant Man gets even weirder somehow. He creates a plant copy of himself, which joins a group called the Celestial Mind Control Movement under the name of, or under the leadership of, the most gay supervillain of all time, maybe Nebulon. Nebulon, go just look up a picture and you'll see everything you need. And the Plant Man construct fights like Nighthawk and the Defenders and like tries to extort millions of dollars, but Luke Cage kicks his ass. But we now see him creating copies of himself, like Jamie Madrox style, to go have like independent lives because he needs a nap. Like, go commit crimes, plant me.
I love that. As a Jamie Madrox fan,
Plant
no
me.
notes. Love it.
And then we go to Marvel Team Up 71.
So first of all, I love that this story is called Death Garden, because that should really be Plant Man's new name. It would be a lot better than Plant Man. Death Garden, way more metal. A quick setup for this. This is a story starring Spidey and the Falcon, really. Captain America is messed up and dying because he touched a toxic flower through his glove somehow. Falcon takes him to a lab to get help, and he's told an antidote is needed. He needs to go to a lab to find that. So meanwhile, Spidey stops a robbery by some dudes in pink and purple at the science lab, and Falcon is staking it out. So after Spider-Man has a confrontation, Falcon gets in there and fights Spidey because he wants to get the antitoxin that that happens to be there. There's this, I guess, poison called Pretty Poison that has been field tested on Captain America.
Gayer and gayer.
Yeah. Plant Man has this new base, a mansion surrounded by greenhouses. And he has the group of flunkies that are dressed in pink and purple that Spidey and the Falcon just. So Plant Man is feeding a plant a syringe full of some sort of golden beans and says, I can't even believe, when you sent us some of the notes, I couldn't believe this was actually in there. There we go, my pet. You really love this stolen government nutrient, don't you? So, Falcon and Spidey, like I said, they interrogated a dude and now they're going to team up and they decide that they're going to infiltrate this base. They disguise themselves as goons and then they sneak in. Plant Man fires a ray at Spider-Man, calling him a pathetic insect. Pretty lame. The man you now face is not the Plant Man you remember, but a genius whose vast potential has finally been realized. I have merely begun to taste the sweet nectar of success. So kill my pretty.
That's a great line.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And, you know, then he just loses. And that's pretty much all there is to it in this.
It's
the nectar of his success.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Oh, yeah. He's in the Defenders for a Day story, and then we get maybe his gayest appearance. And this is saying something in Micronauts 21. I'm not even going to set up the context. We're just going to share with you this villain's journey. Plant Man is in a relationship. Samuel Smithers has a girlfriend. He is in love. Her name is Fawn, F-A-W-N. She's a simple local girl who doesn't have much and never thought she'd amount to much. But boy, is she happy. She has Sam to hold her, and we won't be poor forever, honey. It's like all very Suddenly Seymour, right? Like he saved her from Skid Row. And she owns a nursery, and it's next to the bank. And that's the only reason he is wooing her at all, because he needs access to the bank, and he likes her nursery. So he is being all like lovey-dovey with Fawn, but when she leaves, he puts on his little plant costume made of leaves. This time he has a little flowery belt that's purple, and purple bracelets, and a bedazzled purple ray gun, and it turns out it was all a ruse. He stole city blueprints from the library, learned of the plant shop next to the bank, and made the owner of the shop think he loved her until she trusted him enough to leave him alone in her shop so that he could grow her plants into slaves and make them break into the bank. Mwahahaha. And in the middle of all of this, while he's monologuing, Fawn walks in. He's dressed in a plant costume. Eee, who are you? What do you want? The chick. Of all the blasted times for her to come back. Sam,
of all the times.
Baby, why are you wearing that outlandish costume?
Because I am this costume, baby. When I put it on, it's exit Sam Smithers and enter Plant Man, master of the vegetable world.
And then he gets attacked by a bunch of 2-inch superheroes called the Micronauts. And you know, you can go from there. It's fucking delightful. It's so gay. And his little
I love that Fawn is the beard.
Yeah, Fawn fell in love with this old gay man and it just didn't work out for her. Poor thing. We've never seen her again.
And then was so shocked when his ray gun was bedazzled and he had purple highlights on his outfit.
We've never seen Fawn again. Have you done research to verify that?
I wrote the Plant Man profile. So I can confirm.
Somebody needs to bring her back.
You know, or not. She's okay, I think, where she is. She's in a cavern somewhere with Terry Sue Bottoms. For those that know that reference, we'll just leave that there. It's she's delightful. Jumping to Avengers 231, worth 232. He has now a bark-colored costume with like green accoutrements, and he has hit the big time. He's learned how to create full life forms out of plants, like plant simuloids. Like they look like people. So he's been capturing people and replacing them with like plant versions, which is very like Body Snatchers. He ends up taking over an entire fucking SHIELD base. He kidnaps the president and demands $1 billion, nearly kills the president. Then he creates a giant tree monster to fight the Avengers. He escapes. The Navy and the Avengers go after him. He has to grow a bunch of kelp to attack them. No, not the Avengers, not again. He shoots some torpedoes. I hope those are enough. And the narrator, after he says that, the narrator, the caption box just goes, they're not. It's just like, so it turns out the Plant Man like teamed up with the wizard who built his ship, and there's an escape pod and it shoots him into space. And when he gets into space, there's a pre-programmed message from the wizard that says, now you can die in orbit, bitch.
But without the bitch part.
Yeah, right. I added that piece.
That was it. That's and better.
Captain Marvel frees him like Monica Rambeau, and Plant Man falls out of the sky and Thor catches him and he's just having his best fucking day. Like this is a big, like he has a whole SHIELD base. There's a presidential kidnapping plot. Do you guys have thoughts? This is a good moment for Sam.
I mean, being caught by Thor especially would be a nice way to cap the day.
After your boyfriend, the wizard, dumps you out of space, yes.
Which, when you said before, like, Plant Man is out to conquer the stars themselves. I mean, but plants don't do well in space. Like
this man is mentally ill.
I like how much he accomplished here. This is another thing that they did with a lot of the villains in the past, where they kind of start off as buffoons, but then they have their moment, you know, where they show that they're really a force. They could be deadly, but then they just fuck it up. So I like that. I like that they could elevate him. You could see him where if he just had some brains or maybe teamed up with somebody who was worth a shit, who had a plan, that maybe he could actually win. He came pretty close. He had the president.
He tries that later. This man just wants attention. I don't know. He's chaos. When we jump to Solo Avengers 19 and 20, he has built a dome full of like plant people and monsters and like advanced vegetation. He's got a couple like girl plants in costumes. He's like planning machinery around him because he wants to change like a whole ecosystem. But Hawkeye and a guy named the Orb, who definitely needs a Patreon, he has an eyeball for a head. They like interrupt him and they have to fight all these like plant guys that are riding around on motorcycles. Just insanity. He's in Fantastic Four 335, where he's been mentally influenced into attacking the Fantastic Four, but he runs into a mutant named Quill and gets quilled, and then he goes to jail. He's in Avengers Annual 19. There's a Plant Man simuloid who attacks Avengers Mansion and beats up some construction workers. Another one fights She-Hulk in one issue. He shows up in Marvel Holiday Special 1991, where there's an army of Christmas trees that have been animated by Plant Man, and Captain Ultra beats them up.
A heartwarming Christmas tale.
There's also a character created by Fabian Nicieza called the Terraformer, who's a Plant Man creation that's part of the New Warriors villains, the Force of Nature. It's a plant guy that has like his own life for a little while. And then we jump to Namor. This is the first kind of shift for Plant Man. Do you guys have any thoughts on the appearances up until the shift?
I mean, I still just don't really know what he wants. You know, what is his, he has no goals really.
Marcus on, he wants attention.
I know, but they don't even say that. But like, you know, I wish they gave him something concrete, because you just never can really take him serious. He doesn't even really have a good backstory or anything.
Like, there's just so much potential there.
It really is. I mean, he's really powerful. He can control plants and manipulate sizes, and
the simuloids, like, that sounds great.
I know.
He has a career as a fashion designer. He just missed out on his true calling his whole life. Okay, in Namor, now I do have an episode this month on the Patreon about a group called the Hill Three, so we're not going to spend a lot of time, but Iron Fist in the mystic land of Kunlun, they have a like race of tree people who are constantly at war with the mortals, and they want to like take over humans, and they're really scary. So go see that episode, which will come out right before or right after this one, with my friend Patrick Lugo. So in Namor, Plant Man, is in jail. He gets a package with a cake in it. And when he opens it, and the cake sprouts out a monster, which has been sent by these tree people from another dimension. And it turns out that these tree people were the ones that initially sent the lightning bolt that powered up Plant Man's gun. So the reason he has powers is because of these guys. The leader is named Seth Sugar, S-S-S-E-S-T-H-U-G-A-R. And he wants to, like, invade and conquer Earth. Plant Man ends up, like, conquering Wolverine, and, like, he'll three take Wolverine over with some, like, plants, and he, like, has a bunch of flunkies. He's got, like, a woman named Weed who's hanging out with him, and he feeds, like, some of them to the Hill 3, and then Namor shows up, and Plant Man has a big new costume, and it's somehow worse than anything he's worn before. It's, like, yes. Brown pants and a brown hat and a brown trench coat and a handkerchief over his face. John Byrne design, terrible, terrible. We get a flashback to his initial first appearance, and there's a little bit of expansion in the dialogue here. All my studies prove plants have an intelligence all their own, an intelligence of a different order from that of humans. With this device, I know I'll soon increase that intelligence until I can communicate with them. So he ends up turning against the Hill 3 in the end, and, you know, that's kind of where things are for this guy. It's a big upgrade, but then a downgrade when it comes to the costume. Markazan, you seem to have opinions on this costume.
Well, listen, I have to give him credit because he keeps changing his costume. You know, in real life, we always want to wear different outfits. And so he clearly has a fashion crisis going on throughout his long and ridiculous run. So I kind of like that because there's so many. I mean, X-Men are actually pretty good at changing costumes over the years, but a lot of superheroes and villains that just don't. But yeah, I don't know why you would go to this. It's so non-plant-like, but I just think it kind of goes back to the fact that he doesn't know what he wants. He is Plant Man, but he doesn't know how to be Plant Man.
Maybe he's staking his independence. These plant creatures are trying to control him, and he likes it the other way around.
Maybe he just wants to be a normal guy.
It's just so drab. Like, Sam, yeah. You can do better.
Yeah, it's real awful. Again, go to the Marvel Appendix. I have a whole costume gallery for this guy if you look him up. It's woof. He joins a group called the New Enforcers. He's at an auction. And then we have his next big appearance, which is a surprising X-Men tie-in. It's a Generation X story, an Amazing Spider-Man 437.
I was not expecting a Spidey title, and I was definitely not expecting a Generation X appearance in Amazing Spider-Man. But here we are, number 437, guest starring Sync. We open with Spidey as like half spider, half self, and we get one of those tropes of a few hours earlier. He was at home, he's studying, he needs to go for a walk, and by walk, he means do some web-slinging and fight some crime. And the crime he finds is Sync about to be mugged, but he doesn't know that it's Sync. A few punches later, a little bit of webbing, and he saves the day. Off goes Sync, off goes Spider-Man, and we get this monologuing, yet again, Plant Man, who in comic version of a malaprop is wanting revenge on Generation X, and therefore Sync, even though it wasn't actually Plant Man who was defeated by Generation X in the reference title.
This ties over to a plotline in Gen X where they have an ally named Mondo, who turns out to be a creation by Black Tom Cassidy. There's a real Mondo as well, and there's a big plant battle, and Man-Thing comes, and for some reason, Plant Man really wants revenge for all of this. It's fine.
Even though it wasn't actually him. Sync is walking along, and all these plants come around in a very, like, very toothy a picture of Plant Man. We get why he wants revenge, because his powers and his costume was mocked by Generation X. And this is the best. Like, should have stuck with a absurdly large headpiece. But now he's got like little triangle crescent triangles coming off. Like his face has been peeled open so he can see out.
So clearly the editors on this particular book thought it was Plant Man that fought Jet X. Now later we're going to learn Plant Man has a special affinity for the kingdom, the green. We'll talk about it in a little while. You almost wonder if like he just like talked to some plant who was there with Black Tom. I don't know. He shouts lines like, losing to those annoying kids the first time we fought was bad enough, but their lack of respect was even more irritating. They mocked both my costume and my powers. I mean, really. They cower at the mere mention of Magneto, the master of magnetism, and what has that cretin accomplished with his mutant supremacy silliness? Perhaps plants just aren't considered cool enough in the colloquial parlance. You and your sisters, my love, he's talking to a flower, will soon teach them the error of their ways, magnetism.
mutants, bah, the deciduous, the coniferous, that is where true power lies. Because this dialogue sucks. It's so bad.
Okay, but I wrote it in the margins of my notes.
So and you just read it all, so it can't be that bad.
Oh, I'm smiling.
I know, right?
Like, I just need to go into the woods behind Daryl's house and be like, the deciduous, the coniferous, and just embrace the power that's there.
Wait, you haven't done that?
Well, I didn't know this dialogue existed until now.
I thought you were a plant guy. I'm really, really disappointed.
This writer paid attention that one day where they covered trees in class. You remember those two words?
Yeah, I honestly haven't really heard coniferous as a word before, but they needed something to go along with deciduous, so I'll give them that. So in this very odd, toothy introduction splash page, we get the flower going through the ground and emerging in front of Sink, and just, I don't know the tasteful way of describing what's happening, but it's just a face full of goop out of this flower, right in the face. As Coco Peru says, that's got a sting in the eye. And Sink just starts to transform into a big hulking version of himself, and he starts smashing stuff, gets the attention of Spider-Man, who then starts fighting with this disfigured and morphed Sink. So he's winning, and we get another little inset of Plant-Man being like, not quite what I had in mind. But off they go until Spider-Man looks in Sink's eyes and sees the hurt and the fear. There's a Janelle Monáe song called Dorothy Dandridge Eyes. I imagine Sink has some of that expressiveness going on for himself. But that's how Spidey realizes that something is up. That and the fact that this other gigantic plant is emerging from the ground to drag Sink under. So off he goes. Spider-Man goes into the tunnel to try and pursue, figure out what's going on. Like, he knows that this morph Sink isn't truly his enemy, and he's evading all the plants because his spider sense is pretty amazing, till it's not, and he ends up getting, also gets a special kind of facial from this flower.
A coniferous facial.
Yes. And that's when we get this transformation. So his hands turn into talons, half his face turns into a spider face with all the little itty bitty eyes and a little bitty fang, and an allusion to other aspects of his anatomy that are changing that shall go unmentioned. So he makes it to the cavern and he retains more of himself. So he's able to still get some barbs off, and he's like, you're going to be defeated, Plant Man. You might as well get that antidote ready. You do have an antidote, right? Like, because you have to have one. Like, I need you to have one. And Plant Man is like, of course I've made an antidote. Safety first. Which... is really setting up him to be a face at some point. Like, if he is going through this with safety first and he knows to make an antidote, he can't really be that evil, can he? Jury's out. There's a battle. Plant Man creates these big bark golems to fight Spider-Man. Spider-Man realizes that they're very hard, but also very brittle. Those two things usually go hand in hand. And so he and Sink break free, start smashing some of these bark golems into pieces. There's a line in here about he really should go into business of toothpicks.
I'm going to take a moment to read this whole interchange just really quickly. This is an example of dialogue here. They're fighting. Plant Man says, I hope you don't intend to prolong this indefinitely. I'm a busy man with plants to water, you know, and many other heroes to mutate. Simply succumb now. Spidey says, you sure you want the hassle of being a supervillain? Guy with your talents could make a fortune in the toothpick trade. My thanks for the career advice, Arachnid, but I really had my heart set on world domination. Imagine man's cities utterly overgrown by vines, weeds, flowers of hallucinogenic hue bursting through the macadam of Madison Avenue, rivers of chlorophyll cascading over. And that's when they like come to like beat up his big tree monster. So this man like, has dreams.
He does. Yeah, and like, but the length of time that he's spending monologuing, you can see the bark golems in the background getting worn down more and more.
At least he has some kind of motivation here, is what I was going to say, is because we know he wants to just transform the world into, you know, coniferous.
It's very poison ivy in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really generic, but at least it's something, because we haven't really gotten anything until that point.
Yeah. So Sink figures out that he can sync himself to Spider-Man, very confused by the Spidey sense going off in his head, but it comes in handy for another of these big flowers who tries to spew more needles. Venom-covered thorns. We're giving Plant Man his due. So they dodge all those. Plant Man has this other one, like Spider-Man gets through, and we get this weird image of Plant Man like sidling up to a plant with some white blossoms. It glows, like there's a bright flash of light right in Spider-Man's eyes. And spiders are generally not fans of bright light, especially sudden bright light. So it freaks him out. He almost succumbs, but he closes his eyes, which is such a simple way to avoid Plant Man's attack. He basically throttles Plant Man a little bit, throws him into this pit of flowers. So Plant Man gets a facial of his own and it turns into this writhing, barky mass.
So his serum works on him too.
Yes. He did not think to make himself immune to it, which really set himself up for failure. Spider-Man gets the antidote. He's like, I'm just going to let Plant Man stew for a little bit before we administer it. Some webbing fixes up his costume, preserves his modesty and his secret identity at the same time. And he and Sync have a nice moment at the end of Sync thanking him for saving him twice in one day.
It's a fun little Sync story and a terrible Plant Man story. But again, you know, this is a crazy man. Marcuson, did you have thoughts up to here?
I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this one.
So I'll cover this next part quickly, but I love this entire run of comics. When I had Fabian Nicieza on the show, I interviewed him about his Thunderbolts run. I asked him, like, which section of your comics do you want me to talk about? He's like, I never get to talk about Thunderbolts. I love his long run. It's his longest Marvel run. He was on Thunderbolts for so long. And there was a point in the book where it got really weird. The cast got really large and it got split into two. But I loved, like, being the back issue kid. Like, he'd bring a character like Mankiller or Cyclone in, and suddenly I wanted to go learn all about every character that was being featured. So there's a storyline where Hawkeye ends up going to jail, like sacrifices himself for the team. And while he's in jail, Mentallo is influencing some prisoners. It's a weird Justin Hammer story. Justin Hammer is an old industrialist. He's dead now, who created like a control device in supervillains that is like in their blood, but it can only be controlled through like plant matter. So Plant Man is like the key to be able to control the shit that Justin Hammer put in all of the supervillains. That's kind of the premise here. So Plant Man is like a hot commodity. Hawkeye gets broken out, or like, well, the prison transport escapes because Graviton caused an earthquake. And Hawkeye is like tied to the villain Headlock, who's a telepath, Cottonmouth from the Serpent Society, and Plant Man. And they're like stuck in these like power blocking manacles, and they go on run for a long time. And the manacles are blocking Sam's connection to like talking to the vegetable life of Earth. And it's like causing him pain as a result. So this is where we first get like a premise into this guy's interior world. He's responding to the energy of plants around him. And in a way that a character like Nature Girl among the X-Men might like respond with rage. If you guys read X-Men Green a few years ago. So Plant Man has like some of that energy going on. There's a moment when a guardsman tracks them down and Plant Man is able to activate some mold spores in this guy's mouth, and it kills this guard because he's asthmatic. And Hawkeye's like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, this guy died while I'm on a mission, you know. Anyway, they go to Justin Hammer to try to get the manacles off. Songbird is there undercover. The Crimson Cowl like forms a whole group of Masters of Evil. They're all after Plant Man. We jump forward in the series. Plant Man is now like accessing the hive mind of all vegetables across Earth. He calls it the quote, the verdant fields, or the green. We are attuned to the bioelectric wavelength, the rhythm and the pulse which links all organic vegetation across the planet. He gets kidnapped by Crimson Cowl because she wants to use the Justin Hammer thing. Justin Hammer's her dad, by the way, and her name is Justine Hammer, which is just terrible. Don't name your child with one extra letter. It's bad. Now he's like slowly turning into vegetable form, which is what we saw happen when he got like splooged in the face in that last adventure with Spider-Man and Sync.
Splooged.
he's explaining to Hawkeye like how he can like commune with plants. They are very quiet at night, the plants. Do you know that when they sleep, they hum to each other? Like a lullaby my mother sung to me. I lost my parents when I was very young. He ends up adopting the name Blackheath, which is like a park, like a wilderness preserve in London in like the 1800s. So apparently it's something connected to his origins. We finally jump to issue 69. This is where Plant Man gets his own cover billing. He's been captured by the Crimson Cowl. She dehydrates him because she's trying to take him over. And because he's dying, his body, his organic form is dying, his mind enters the verdant fields. And the narration tells us he had been here once before, briefly, when he first started to change. Overwhelmed, unable to comprehend the enormity of what he'd become, he retreated to the benign safety of reality. But now, under the stress of severe trauma, Sam Smithers has returned. But where did he return to? What is he? He swims through a tidal pool of life. He feels it calling to him, welcoming him into the verdant fields. The green shows him the way. In his mind, he sees how all this came about. And he, like, learns all about this biotoxin that, like, Hammer created. And Sam activated so he can take control. And he realizes, quote, he could free the planet of the blight of mankind. He could make this world the paradise it was meant to be. He thinks back to his own parents, how they worked themselves into an early grave, how he was raised as a gardener, as a servant, how he was never educated. I was such an idiot, wasn't I? One ridiculous costume after another, ridiculous scheme after another, righteous beating after another. I wasted so much potential. Why? And he has a conversation with himself in his own leafy hat costume. He's conjured, the one with the open face, that like terrible one. And that version of him answers, because we don't know how to do anything else. And yes, I'd agree, this outfit was the most ridiculous of them all. And he goes, fine, so the costume was pretty bad. I take it the verdant fields are playing a mind game with me now then. And the other self says, it's no game. It's what you need to open your eyes. What are you going to do, Blackheath? What are you going to be? Jump to issue 71. Sam regrows himself by draining Hydro Man. Gross. He finds that things are going crazy with the Thunderbolts and S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Masters of Evil. In 73, there is a new team of Thunderbolts, the V Battalions here. They have to plug a hole in reality. Blackheath, like, sends heaps of Earth to, like, aid in this mission, knowing he is, quote, damaging the green. But the team gets sucked through the void, and they end up on Counter-Earth. Don't worry about it. We jump to 75, where he chooses to stay with the Thunderbolts as this, like, whole mission ends. And now he's on the main team alongside Atlas, Fixer, Moonstone, Songbird, and Vantage, who's Dallas Riordan. He wants to, like, be a hero now in order to help the green. And he's in this new, like, craggly bark guy form. He looks like Black Tom in his, like, mutated form. He's, like, shirtless in black pants and has, like, green spiky hair and a green goatee. So I'll cover the rest of that in just a moment, but this is his most poignant story, and it actually makes the character work in ways that are really thought-provoking and make him really amped up with power.
We finally get some depth to the character, and I love this Thunderbolts run, and I had forgotten that he was even in it. But I love the Kurt Busiek started it, and then Fabian Nicieza, like, took it over, and, like, his run was even better, I thought. So it was fun to really go back to this and see how much time he spent on Plant Man, just to try to get inside his head a little bit more about why he's doing what he's doing, why he's got all these costume changes, and trying to turn him into a hero, which I liked, because he does have all these great powers and advantages that can be, that could help other people instead of just doing whatever he's been doing, which is, was aimless, basically.
I love when a writer takes what's there and makes it work, and then, like, uses it as motivation. It only takes a couple pages or paragraphs of dialogue sometimes. Now, here's the weird thing. I don't like this version of Plant Man very much, but I love the character development.
Black and the Heath, redemption arc.
Give me the leafy costume anytime over Blackheath. It's so much more fun.
The name's better. I love the story. Name's way better. Although Death Garden, I'm lobbying for Death Garden.
I really love that. I feel like Plant Man got a nice glow up for that. And X-Factor nerd that I've become with Daryl, there in the first issue of Peter David's X-Factor, Richter has this whole moment where he's disconnected from the Earth because he's been depowered, and, like, he can feel the Earth shift and move and breathe. And from your description, that's what Plant Man is getting with the verdant green. Like, he has that connection. It seems just so beautiful. And that's so nice for him. I'm so happy for Sam.
The addition to his background as well, the idea of his, like, working class parents who died, his lack of education, the idea that, like, plants were the place that he found his refuge a little bit, and then you go forward to that job he got working as a servant, and the white guy fires him, and then that bolt of lightning strikes his gun, and of course he wants revenge. So this idea of him, like, communicating with the plants, the green, and how it, like, shifts his mood consistently also adds a lot of, like, pathos to, like, the types of things he's done, because he can create monsters, he can create human life, he can take over bases races. He can control humans with plants. He can mutate people. This guy's really fucking powerful. Mm-hmm. And now he has a moment where he could kill every man on Earth, but chooses not to. So yeah. There's a lot of really interesting... The story wraps up. Nicieza does like a story called Avengers Thunderbolts. It's 6 issues. Sam's kind of going crazy. He's calling everybody meat. And they're building a device called the Liberator that's going to help the Thunderbolts control all the energy on Earth. He's helping take down nuclear power plants in foreign countries. He's processing fertilizer into ammonium from ammonium nitrate. He's like doing good for the world. There's a big fight with Cobalt Man, but really it's Iron Man in disguise. Go back and see my Cobalt Man episode. And then there's a fight with the Wizard, Sam's ex-boyfriend. That's my canon. And then the Liberator gets activated. And by the end of the story, Blackheath ends up like turning back into his human form and gets sent off to jail. I'm like over skipping a bunch of stuff, but he ends up back in his human body by the end of the story. And bravo, Fabian Nicieza, for doing what no one else will ever do with this character ever again.
He invested in him for sure.
It's a little, I don't know, a little bit of a downgrade, I feel like, when you start to lose that big connection. But good for him for realizing that face turn that I was hoping would happen earlier in the show.
Yeah, it's the upgrade we needed, but also I was kind of fine with how it was.
It comes at a cost of the ridiculous campiness that made us fall in love with him in the first place.
In the Avengers and X-Men Axis #1, this is where all the heroes get inverted with the villains. Plant Man has like a monstery plant form, and he's attacking the city with vines. Plant Man will suffer mankind's putrid corruption, no longer Avengers. And it's all messy. The Red Onslaught is there, and Iron Man beats Sam up. He's in Guardians of Infinity #3. That was the title. And he's like in a... He like left a dupe in his cell to escape, and he fights Thing and Groot. And he's briefly able to control Groot in the battle, which is crazy because the plant theme, right? Mm-hmm. He's in All New, All Different Avengers 8, where there's the Pleasant Hill thing with Maria Hill, and he's part of that prison. And then we have Empire Avengers. This is the big, like, Kotati plant race invading Earth, and Plant Man gets a story in this Avengers, like, 3-issue part run. It's a really fun series. There's a lot happening in it. But Plant Man goes full plant form, creates a base in Central Park. The world is, like, being conquered by plant aliens. He has created plant monsters. Nature lies dormant no longer. Retribution for plants is at hand, and my human past is gone. I'm Plant Man through and through. The Kotati showed me the potential I've always known was buried within. Now I have the power to create soldiers ready to die fighting for the verdant green. Again, upgrade. We can see what's happening for him here. He ends up getting defeated by the very odd combination of Vision, Luke Cage, and Dr. Nemesis from the X-Men. And that's like the last big place for this guy. I gotta mention one fun fact, which is also very queer. In the handbooks, it gives us a single line with no context that tells us he has an ex-wife named Desdemona, which is also very gay somehow.
Barry Moon of Uranus. Oh,
wow. What are your thoughts on this guy? There's some really interesting potential, and kind of the way he's been left now. It's almost like he leaves you wondering what's going to be next for him now that he's out of his silly era, but I just want the silly era back, really.
Well, the dialogue's still silly. So they never changed that, which is crazy. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot you could still do with him. I mean, you could even do a whole series with him. I think he should get kicked out of the Verdant Green and have to try to reacclimate to repossess it and really figure out who he is, because he's so tied to this plant identity but never really does anything with it. You know, he has moments, he has flashes, but he never really succeeds at anything.
Yeah.
So I think the guy just really needs to be kicked out of it, have no powers, and then try to connect with it in a way that really matters to him and to others, and that just hasn't happened.
Ryan North does this thing in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl where it's a joke where she's, I'm Squirrel Girl, superpowers of squirrel and superpowers of girl. And I always find myself doing that with villain names now, or hero names. So if he has the powers of plant and man, almost the dichotomy of these two sides at war within him is almost the most interesting thing about this guy.
Right. Exactly. And so that's why I think if you did that, if he had somehow, he had none of those plant things, but he felt like something was missing in him. It's almost like, I almost kind of pictured like Ultimate Spider-Man, the series series that's going on right now where Peter doesn't have any of his powers. He's older, but he feels like something's missing in him. And then he gets it back and he's got to figure out what to do with them and how to use them. That would work better for Plant Man because he needs that. He needs some kind of an actual struggle instead of just kind of plodding along.
I like that idea of him being kicked out of the Verdant Green, like there being some sort of godly tribunal of plant-based deities that kick him out. And he has to do things to sort of prove his worthiness to be a part of it. And I feel like there's some potential there, especially if he has to realize something about like growth, death, rebirth, that cycle. Very, very Skyrim, the god Akatosh of god of death, but also rebirth and the whole season change. That would be fascinating for him to go through that hero journey, come out the other side differently, and then figure out what he learned from it. And like, how can he be, how is he changed and with his new connection?
His place in the wider Marvel lexicon with characters like this, like he chose to turn against the Hill Three, but he chose to submit in a way to the Kotati. And they, like, these are literal plant races. And we've never seen him in any significant relationships. Some of Marvel's queerest supervillains have a story in like the 80s where they briefly were married or had a wife. And it's the only story you've ever seen. It's like very Lavender Marriage, you know, Rock Hudson like gets a wife.
So you want like, Plant Man date night with Desdemona?
Well, Plant Man and Desdemona, Plant Man with that Fawn girl, right? Like, there's just that story. Oh,
I thought you didn't want her back.
No, I mean, it's just very queer coded is what I'm saying. These characters, Puppet Master had a wife and a stepson and like wanted you. And you're like, what? That's the gayest character at Marvel. What are you talking about?
So that's what I mean. You kick him out of the Verdant and he becomes this like regular, because they kept pushing this Verdant as like something, a powerful force, like the Speed Force or the Green in DC, you know? And it's like, I would like to see that extended, have that tribunal kick him out and be like, you are an embarrassment to plants everywhere.
Well, here's a couple stories I'll toss your way, just ideas. Number one, the Verdant Green isn't real. It's a thing that he experiences in his head, but it's really like just his own insanity. Or it's the Hill Three, like influencing his thoughts. Plant Man was able to control Groot. Throw Plant Man with Black Tom or Krakoa or even fucking Apocalypse's wife, Genesis. And like you look at the potential of how he gets among other plant-themed people. I think there's a lot of ways to explore this character. They're really interesting. Mostly, I just want him to like fire like clinging like wet dew at the Human Torch again. Go back to the beginning.
Just go back to the dew days.
Remember this.
do you have a question for both of you before we wrap up? Do you have like your favorite story that showed up here, or like what was the story that like his threat got escalated the most?
I mean, I think it's the Thunderbolts.
He could kill all people on Earth if he chose to in that moment. That's very scary.
I mean, if you think of like he should be able to control an entire planet that has life and vegetation. He should be able to manipulate an entire planet. Just think of all the green, even in the ocean and everything. It's insane. Like if he was able to actually tap into that force, he could master entire planets.
Which takes us back to his first appearance, where he gets the powers and suddenly is like, I can take over the world and now the stars. And if you look at it as like plants speaking through him, like against the threat of humans, that's very interesting, actually.
He's a lot like Aquaman, where people always make fun of him. Oh, you talk to fish? Yeah, but you've seen what he can actually do if he can control sea life. Aquaman's very, very powerful, but he was considered a joke for most of his whole career until, like, I don't know, I think Geoff Johns got a hold of him. So he's kind of like that, where he has these abilities, but he's a buffoon. So you have to take that out of him and do something more. So I think they kind of did that, getting back to your original question here, they kind of did that with Thunderbolts, but they just didn't go all the way with him. And of course, you know, he's a D-lister, so.
Yeah, that Leviathan creature that attacked London, or the Roger Stern story in Avengers where he like creates the entire base of like creepy guys serving him, and then it follows up in solo Avengers. There's a lot of scary versions of this guy. Philip, did you have one?
The creation of Leviathan, he shows him that instance of leveling up his abilities for the first time, but still in a very corny way. But he did very well in terms of subduing one of the more powerful mutants in Namor and Triton as well. And had he not put a cactus in that room of oxygen depleting plants, like he would have succeeded. Plus his whole...
And I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for that pesky cactus. Right?
I mean, he had America on its deathbed. He had Captain America and just almost out. So
those are very gay scenes in those. In that, I sent the pictures to Chad of like, is this supposed to be so gay?
He made Pretty Poison, and they kept using the word hard.
Yes. But what resonated with me about the Submariner stories is he just wanted to be left alone with his plants. Like, boy, same. That's real.
This is a character that has a lot of camp and a lot of silliness, but also a ton of potential. I think he's really fun. The fashion alone is worth the journey of writing through it. But Nisieza gives us all of that pathos that we needed toward the end. The lightweight supervillain, one of my Marvel camp favorites. I really love him in a ridiculous way.
And what you had said just a minute ago about the Verdant Green and seeing his origin in a new light, like having that reverberation or like that echo into this great feel the potential to go back on him. And like, yeah, he chose to interpret that as like, oh, I can conquer the world. But just to get that little sense of power and like that potential that was there is super neat. So
I love hanging out with you both. Thank you for ending my year with Plant Man with me. This is one of those like treasured ones that I've been holding on to for a couple of years. I love this character. He's so fun. This was delightful. I'd love to hear any final thoughts. And where can people find you both online? Is there anything you want to plug for January 2025?
You can find me on Instagram, and our podcast is the X Factor Files podcast. Thoughts for January 25. Best wishes to everyone planting your garden. May your seeds all sprout and your weeds all wither. that is what the energy I'm going to put into January 2025.
Nice. Well, you can check out my website at marcuson.com. I'm Darth Marcuson on Instagram and Threads, and Marcuson on Blue Sky. You can follow By the Horns on social media at bythehorns.com. Comic on Facebook, Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram. I got rid of my Twitter. Fuck Twitter. You can listen to the Metalheads podcast and the Endless Metal podcast on your favorite podcast app. And, you know, happy holidays to everybody. Happy New Year. And 2025, my wife is really into plants. In fact, she got some plant socks that said she was a plant mama or something. And she just loves all the plants here. So I hope that all her plants grow huge and she makes me the best hot peppers because that's what I like.
Nice. I will say, if anyone wants to nerd out about native pollinators or seed starting, let me know. And after this, I really want to do a cosplay of Plant Man.
Oh my God.
It wouldn't be that hard.
Please don't do the brown trench coat look. Not the worst.
No, not that one. There's nothing fun about that one.
No, the one in the second appearance is the best.
Yeah. I still want to see you next time, Philip. I see you in person. I expect you to be fully in a plant. You're gonna look like a bizarre Ann Getty's photo, like those babies dressed in like little plant costumes. Your face, and it's just a plant. I love it. That makes me happy. It's been fun to do some crazy plant stuff between the Hill 3 and Plant Man and Krakoa. Like, I've been all over the plant universe, and it's always fun to take these journeys on the show. So thanks everybody for the ride. Watch for our very special episode at the end of this month on the main show, called About Krakoa. It's a wonderful time. It will really make you reflect on everything you love about X-Men, and really represents the change in the books that we are capturing in the 1975 journey that we are on in 2025. So thank you for listening, everybody. We are having such a good time producing the show. Watch for our next episode out on the Patreon. Is going to be all about Blackheart, the son of Mephisto, with the incredible combination of Anthony Oliveira and Blackheart's creator, Annie Nesenti. So please watch for that. It's going to be a great time. Thanks, Philip. Thanks, Marcuson. We'll see you all back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.